One of my favorite traditions of the Christmas season is watching the holiday specials on television. And some of my earliest memories include watching, shows like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or Frosty the Snowman. I can even remember a commercial from way back then. See if some of you remember this as well. It was Santa Claus riding a Norelco electric razor going over the hills through the snow. How many of you remember that one? Yep. But without question, my two favorites have to be How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and I mean the original Boris Karloff version, and A Charlie Brown Christmas. Now, several years ago, I preached a Christmas season sermon entitled The Original Grinch, focusing on Herod the Great. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to be able to incorporate A Charlie Brown Christmas into the Christmas story as we see in Scripture? And so a number of years ago I did. And it's been long enough now that a lot of you folks have come since then, and those that were here may not remember it. So we're going to enjoy it again this year. I figure if Robert Short can write two books based on the Charlie Brown gang, one is entitled The Gospel According to Peanuts, and the other is The Parables of Peanuts, why can't I preach a few sermons on their Christmas special? So with the help of Dixie, I'm going to incorporate some of that program, but look at Scripture and see some very significant truth from there. As we begin the program, Charlie Brown and Linus are walking through the snow and they're having a conversation.
I think there must be something wrong with me, Linus. Christmas is coming, but I'm not happy. I don't feel the way I'm supposed to feel. I just don't understand Christmas, I guess. I like getting presents and sending Christmas cards and decorating trees and all that, but I'm still not happy. I always end up feeling depressed.
Charlie Brown, you're the only person I know who can take a wonderful season like Christmas and turn it into a problem.
Maybe Lucy's right. Of all the Charlie Browns in the world, you're the Charlie Browniest.
Well, that might be true. He may be the Charlie Browniest. But the fact, numbers of people fall under this holiday letdown that he was expressing. One online medical news site reports, while the holiday season brings sentiments of joy and celebration for some, for others it is a time of isolation and an increase in feelings of depression and negative thoughts. In fact, numerous studies as well as anecdotal evidence from distress centers and crisis workers confirm that there is an increase in both the numbers and the severity of calls by depressed individuals during the holiday season. This is a period of frenetic activity, a time when people are trying to juggle work, an increase in social obligations, shopping, decorating, wrapping, entertaining, and staying on budget. All this leads to a rise in both physical and emotional stress. In fact, believe it or not, December is the highest month for suicides in the entire year. And that tells us that this Christmas depression, this holiday letdown, needs to be taken seriously. We can laugh at an animated program, but in real life, it's no laughing matter. So this morning, I'd like to examine some ways in which we celebrate Christmas that can lead to this holiday letdown. The first problem with our modern mentality is that Christmas has become a time of externalism. I mean, how many of our holiday rituals have to do with decorating the exterior of something? I mean, we decorate the house inside and out. We decorate the Christmas tree. We decorate the presents under the tree. We decorate Christmas cards and Christmas cookies. The list goes on and on. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not at all suggesting that we shouldn't do it. But if we get lost in the external trappings of Christmas, it's possible to miss the true significance of the season. It can lead to an emptiness. It can lead to that letdown feeling. Later on in the program, Charlie Brown comes upon Snoopy, who's working furiously around his doghouse, and we find out why.
What's going on here?
What's this?
Find the true meaning of Christmas? When money, 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 spectacular, super colossal, neighborhood Christmas lights and display contest. Lights and display contest? Oh no!
My own dog gone commercial. I can't stand it.
Oh!
I wonder though, are we much better? Chuck Swindoll insightfully writes, "Every Christmas season, the significant seems to get lost among the insignificant. How often have you heard from people on the street, behind the counters, or outside the church of the wonderful yet simple story of Jesus and his birth? If you've heard it once or twice, you're very rare. Apart from our Christian friends, it is remarkable if you ever hear the Christmas message about Jesus' birth, his incarnation, his coming to earth as a man. Because you see, our world continues to be caught in the web of insignificant things like busy commerce, the profit and loss issues of life. And Christ? Well, who can worry too much about him when history is being made at the cash register? Or is it? One true story I read recently told of a commercial venture, one of the largest department stores in our nation. It proved to be disastrously unsuccessful. It was the doll formed in the shape of baby Jesus. It was advertised as being unbreakable, washable, and cuddly. It was packaged in straw and came with a satin crib and plastic surroundings with appropriate biblical texts here and there to make the scene complete. And it did not sell. The manager of one of the stores tried a last-ditch promotion to get rid of the dolls. And he put up a big sign that said this, "Jesus Christ, mark down 50%, get him while you can." My friend, Jesus is God's lamb. He's the Son of God. He didn't come to be packaged and offered at half price where, if you hurry, you can get him. He came to earth as very God, and the world in its tinsel and tarnish has just about ruined that picture. So I ask you, how can we avoid getting caught up in all the externalism? Now, there's a familiar passage. It comes out of the book of Colossians. We don't usually hear these words during the Christmas season, but I think they're fitting. Colossians 3, verses 1 and 2 says, "Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your heart on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things." What if we were to adopt that second verse as our motto for Christmas this year? Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. I wonder how much would we do differently. I once read in a Decatur Herald and Review of a local church who sponsored an event entitled, "It's Not Your Birthday." According to the article, the idea is for everyone to donate to an organization or mission in honor of celebrating whose birthday it really is, Jesus. What a concept. You know, we say that we celebrate the birth of Christ, and yet how much do we give to him? It'd be like having a birthday party. We just had a birthday party yesterday for a four-year-old, for Wade, that's part of our church family. And there were other children here and several adults. I wonder what would have happened if all of the other children at the party were given presents and Wade didn't get any. I don't think it would have been pretty. Would not have gone over very well, wouldn't it have? And yet, don't we do the same thing at Christmas? We give to everybody else, we acknowledge everybody else, but we don't give to Jesus. Now, I'm not suggesting that you wrap a box and paper and a bow and put it under the tree for Jesus. I'm just thinking, shouldn't we at least give him our attention? Shouldn't we at least give him our affection, our adoration, our allegiance? Wouldn't that be an appropriate gift for Jesus? After all, it is his birthday. Another problem with many Christmas celebrations is it becomes a time of exhaustion. I mean, let's face it. During the holidays, if you start at Thanksgiving, go all the way through New Year's, we eat too much, we spend too much, we're on the go too much, and that can lead to exhaustion. And again, that sense of a holiday letdown. I'm reminded of the words of Psalm 127, verse 2. In vain you rise up early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat. Now, I know that wasn't written about Christmas, but doesn't that just sound right? When you think about staying up half the night, putting those toys together for the kids and making sure that everything's ready for Christmas dinner and all the folks that are coming over. I saw a commercial this last week that made me chuckle. It was the parents waking the kids up early Christmas morning. They're, come on, come on, come on, get up, hurry, come on, get up. And the kids are like, oh, I can't believe this. I feel like I haven't slept at all. And then the parents go run outside and they're hopping up and down about the new car in their driveway. Just kind of turn the scene around a little bit from what we usually think of. But it brings up a point. How often during the Christmas season do we run ourselves into the ground? We're so busy here, there, doing, going, everything that goes on, we're just exhausted. Another passage that I think rings true is Ecclesiastes 1:8. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, the ear never has enough of hearing. Just think Christmas commercials when you think of that verse. There's never enough to see, there's never enough to hear. It just keeps coming at us relentlessly. Now again, I'm not suggesting that the hustle and bustle is wrong. I'm not saying we shouldn't get together with friends and family and enjoy these occasions. But at some point, I think we need to know when to say when. We know when to say, I've done enough, I've got too much on my schedule, and maybe take a little bit of a break. You know, we often associate the word stress with challenges, with difficulties in our lives. But stress can occur in favorable situations as well. I think of a wedding. Now, a wedding is a wonderful occasion, but I can't think of too many things that cause more stress over a long period of time than a wedding. Think about it. How many couples will plan and fret and fuss and spend some more for 6 months or a year over a ceremony that lasts about 20 minutes. You ever notice that? We get all upset, and boy, when the day comes, it's gone and it's done. It's like, whoa, what just happened here? Christmas can be like that too. We can spend so much of our time in running and worrying and just being so busy, we miss what it's all about. There's actually two words associated with stress. One we're familiar with, one we're not. Distress is a word we know, and that's stress that comes from negative things happening in our lives. We get distressed, we get stressed out. But there's also a word called eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S. And that's stress that's brought about by good things. And yes, you get stressed out even over good things. We need to take stock of what we're doing in our lives during the holiday season and sometimes take a step back, catch your breath. An example of this is seen in Mark chapter 6. Jesus had sent out his disciples in pairs to preach and to teach in the surrounding communities. We pick up in verse 30. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, Jesus said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. They needed a break. Even though they were involved in good things, they were doing the Lord's work, they were exhausted. They got to a point where they didn't even have time to eat. Now, have you ever had a day like that? Have you ever had a day where you're just running, you're so busy going here and there and doing this and that, and you realize, wow, I've been gone all day and I haven't eaten anything? I haven't had too many days like that, you can probably tell. But it does happen. We can get ourselves so busy and we can wear ourselves down into exhaustion. Just like the Lord noticed that his disciples needed a chance to unwind, a chance to recharge their batteries, as it were. They needed a break. This is the same Jesus who said in Matthew 11:28, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you what? Rest." Oh, what a beautiful word, isn't it? And we need to take time. I would suggest we need to make time to rest. Don't let your calendar get so filled up that you don't have time to take care of your own physical needs. Make sure you have ample downtime in between those events so that you don't exhaust yourself. Dr. Archibald Hart has written an excellent book called Adrenaline and Stress, and in it he writes, "Of all the techniques available for counteracting stress and reducing the systems of distress, deliberate relaxation represents the most well-developed and thoroughly researched. Not only is it the cheapest healing force we know of, it is probably the most effective. Believe me, relaxation is a powerful tool." And I think it can go a long way to help us avoid the holiday letdown. And then thirdly, our Christmas celebrations tend to be a time of excess. Now, I mentioned before, we tend to overextend ourselves in many ways, but I think that special attention needs to be given to the excessive attention given to the material side of Christmas. And once again, we go back to a Charlie Brown Christmas. Here is a conversation between Charlie Brown and his little sister, Sally.
"I've been looking for you, big brother. Will you please write a letter to Santa Claus for me?"
"Well, I don't have much time. I'm supposed to get down to the school auditorium and direct a Christmas play."
"You write it and I'll tell you what I want to say."
"Okay, shoot."
"Dear Santa Claus, how have you been? Did you have a nice summer? How is your wife?"
"I have been extra good this year, so I have a long list of presents that I want."
"Oh, brother."
"Please note the size and color of each item, and send as many as possible. If it seems too complicated, make it easy on yourself. Just send money. How about tens and twenties?"
"Tens and twenties? Oh, even my baby sister."
"All I want is what I have coming to me. All I want is my fair share."
Now again, we chuckle when we think of a five-year-old asking for tens and twenties from Santa Claus. I wonder, though, how much maybe we haven't encouraged such a mentality in our children and in our grandchildren, who come to think of Christmas only as a time of getting presents and more presents and more presents. You know, we've all seen the pictures of the little kids sitting around the Christmas tree, and they have a stack of gifts in front of them that are all theirs. And that stack quickly becomes a mound of torn wrapping paper. And I've noticed this. A child will be real excited about a gift for about as long as it takes to put it down and get another one. And then they've forgotten about it. And pretty soon they're overwhelmed by so many different presents and toys. You know, you wonder where attention deficit disorder comes from. Maybe we bring it on ourselves. I don't know. But we tend to make Christmas a time of excess. You know, of all of the enemies of the true meaning of Christmas, I think greed is probably the most powerful. We need to be careful that we're not feeding and encouraging a self-centered, materialistic mindset. Jesus said in Luke 12:15, "Watch out. Be on guard against all kinds of greed." And I love this last line. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. You just think about that. You know, substitute presents and gifts for there. A child's joy does not consist in the abundance of his presence. Now, on the other hand, we can become so excessive in our giving, we bury ourselves under a pit of debt. It may take months or years to get out of it. And I know your heart's in the right place. I know that these are expressions of love, but it's not a license to be irresponsible with what God has blessed us with. Max Lucado says, December's generosity will become January's payments, and the magic will begin to fade. And it'll fade pretty fast. Do not try to measure your love for your children or grandchildren by how much you spend on them for Christmas. It sends a wrong message. Not only that, it makes you broke. That's not a good thing either. That'll lead to more stress. This past week, I found a study on the spending habits during the Christmas holidays. Over the past 10 years, the average person in America spends between $850 and $1,050 each on Christmas presents. So if you have a family of five, you're looking at $4,000 to $5,000 a year on Christmas presents. And we wonder why we're in so much debt. Is this really necessary? Once again, I think we can turn to God's Word and find insight on the subject. Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 5, verses 10 and 11, "Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them?" Again, substitute words like presents and gifts and toys for money, wealth, and goods. If you really want to make it hit close to home, substitute whatever you enjoy for the words in that passage. Maybe it's power tools or car accessories or electronic gadgets and games. Now that really hits close home to me. Some of you ladies, maybe it's purses and shoes and other things like that. The more you have, it doesn't make you happier. It's the more you want to get. These things can never satisfy. The billionaire John D. Rockefeller was once asked, "How much money would it take for a person to be truly happy?" You know what his answer was? A little bit more. And it doesn't matter how much you have. It doesn't make you truly happy. You always need a little bit more. Paul writes in 1 Timothy 6, beginning in verse 6, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing into the world, we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." Now, I want you to notice that passage did not say that money is the root of all evil. That's not what the Bible teaches. Money is a valuable tool. It's the love of money that is the root of all kinds of evil. And we need to be careful that we don't allow the excesses of the Christmas holiday to produce people who want to get rich or who are eager for money. Instead, in the words of Hebrews 13:5, "Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have." Now, you are never going to hear that on a commercial on your television or radio during this time of year. I guarantee it. Our economy runs on discontent. Can you imagine what widespread contentment would do to the American economy? It'd come to a screeching halt. No, we're out there pushing for the newer, the faster, the brighter, the bigger, the better. But is that what God has to say? Maybe today you find yourself a bit like Charlie Brown. Maybe you feel depressed. You know you should be happy, but you're not. Maybe you think the trouble is Christmas. You just don't understand it. Instead of feeling happy, you just feel let down. Maybe you've been caught up in the externalism, the exhaustion, and the excess that has taken over the Christmas celebration in our culture. I really believe that the answer to the holiday letdown is to stop. Stop focusing on the externals. Stop running yourself into exhaustion. Stop feeding the greed of others and putting yourself behind the eight ball because of excessive spending and giving. Just stop. Stop. Take a deep breath. Remember what Christmas is really all about. Because you see, when you get right down to it, Christmas isn't about what. It's about who. And that who is Jesus.